This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. It's beautiful here in Los Angeles, as always, especially when it rains. Can't complain about it because we need the rain, obviously. We're no longer having the drought anymore, but the traffic becomes impossible. It took me about an extra hour to get home, so I'm having a good time. But I'm kind of easing into vacation here. I got to work 2 days. Then I'm off for a full week, but I got my weekend, and then I work 2 days, and then I'm off for a week. So I'm looking forward to that. Planning on going to see APW, as I'm going to be up in the San Francisco area. And it just so happens that my wife's birthday coincided with San Francisco Beer Week. So a couple buddies of mine who work at breweries are already sending me some flyers saying, "Hey, come down to my work on this night. We got this special event going on." They got Pliny the Younger at Russian River, so I might try to sneak up there and catch it while I can. It'll be my first time drinking one of these white whale beers. I usually don't mess with the kind of buzzy, you know, have to wait in line stuff. But if I happen to be up there at the brewery around the time of it, why not go check it out? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I totally get that. But, man, let's get into some wrestling. We have a lot to cover. We're going to be looking at New Japan, the New Beginning show. We're going to look at this week's CWF Mid-Atlantic show, Worldwide show. We're going to look at Ring of Honor show. We're going to look at NXT show. And then we're going to finish it up with the most current Progress Wrestling show. So a lot of interesting wrestling happening. But let's start off with New Japan Pro Wrestling, New Beginning. And we open up with Desperado. Who's that? Kanemura versus Kushida and Kawato. What do you think of this, man?
I thought that Kawato looked good. I thought that Kushida's hot tag was really the only thing of note for the match. The kind of Okada roll with the bridging German suplex double pin was really nice. I thought that, you know, realistically, for the most part, the Kushida hot tag was really it for the match itself. Kawato gets the Boston Crab for a long time, shows off some of his different pinning, you know, techniques. He's pretty quick, but Desperado hits him with his big finish, and they take the pin. And it's nice to see, again, Kushida stands out here in what a lot of other guys, you know, when you get the third-gen guys are in these matches, they sometimes phone it in. Kushida doesn't do that at all. Obviously, he's much younger, but you see Kushida, he gives it kind of 100% even just for his little spot in this match. I gave it 2.5 stars, fine little opener. I think Kawada looks good. El Desperado is fine. Kanemaru's an interesting pickup from them. He kind of came in to Suzuki-Gun while they were in Noah, and New Japan actually takes him in as their own, which they didn't do with a lot of guys. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see Segura stayed behind, but they take Kanemaru, so we'll see. There's talks about, you know, Mara Fuji, but from what I can hear, he's really integral to the backstage politics of Noah, so he's not likely to actually switch over. But, you know, this kind of the mixing of the brands here with Noah and New Japan coming to an end is kind of interesting to see how they go forward here. But solid opener, nothing insane.
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 2.5 stars also. I mean, it was just pretty much, it felt like it was, I mean, I know Kawato is a young boy, but I mean, it was clearly like Kushida's the star. And if this was like an 80s like TV thing, it'd be Kushida was booked with just a complete underneath guy, because that's pretty much what they did. They worked over Kawato's back throughout the match. They just destroy the young boy. He finally gets the hot tag, and Kushida looks great. And then he ends up tagging back in. Another thing I liked, I love the ref spot by Kanemura. And then we get Kawato back in, and then he ends up eating the pin. It was pretty paint-by-the-numbers type of match. But it was fine for an opener. Then we got Tenzan Kojima. Who was that? Kojima, Tenzan Kojima, and
Nagata.
Nagata versus Yoshitatsu, Hene and Oka?
Hanar
and Oka?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like this. It was okay. I love the pile-up chop-up. I love that spot. And I thought it was a fun, beefy fight. About 2.5 stars. Really nothing, you know, nothing to really glam onto. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it 2 stars because this one, I thought, comparatively, this is what I'm talking about. I mean, the stack up for the machine gun chops into the big elbow spot is super over, and it's fun to watch, but it doesn't take much, you know? And you can't blame Kojima for that, but he's not putting effort into this match, you know what I mean? It's not a big deal for him. Nagata, meanwhile, he did somewhat... I found Tenzan, I mean, he comes in and he gets the biggest reaction just for doing Mongolian chops. You can hear the hissing throughout the entire building. People are really into him, so I definitely enjoy that. But Yoshitatsu looks like fucking hell. The guy just looks like death warmed over even here. I mean, he's not doing anything important. His hair's a mess. He's not, you know, he's no kind of tan, barely in shape. I just feel bad for the guy.
Has his hair ever not been a mess?
I mean, when he was in NXT, he looked like he had it dyed and cut and colored and all that.
Oh, yeah, that was probably because they told him to.
Yeah, exactly. But he looks like shit. The poor guy, I mean, he's just not putting a lot of effort, and I can't blame him because it's just not working for him here in New Japan. But good news is I hear he's going for a little trip to CMLL, so we'll see if that, you know, kind of breathes some new life into the guy. Nagata, as I said, Nagata's a little bit more open to, you know, working and selling with Oka here, especially because of Oka's kind of legitimate wrestling background. And yeah, he was an Olympic hopeful, and Nagata's worked very close with him, so you see him being willing to give him some, but then he does eventually tap him out with the cross face. So, you know, fine stuff. As I said, 2 star for me, because I just see the old timers, you know, they're hitting their spots that get over with the crowd. Don't blame them at all for it. Solid, you know, what you should do at that age. But, you know, I just don't see a lot of merit to the match for me personally. For the crowd live, they probably loved it.
Yeah. And what do you think about the next match, which was Ospreay, Gato and Jado versus Shibata, Liger and Tiger Mask?
I did like the interactions with Ospreay and Shibata to start. It's been long enough in New Japan with Ospreay getting to show off his mat skills that I think it's nice. And it gets a good reaction here because the crowd hasn't been overdone and done to death, so it works. Then you have Jado. Gato come in, and especially Gato is doing all of his heel stick. They're double teaming. They're poking eyes of Liger. They're doing low super kicks to the knees, which I love. And then just, it's Shibata, won't, any chance he gets, he's rushing at Ospreay and attacking him, which I love. And again, it works to what I was talking about with the match with Matt Riddle, where Shibata in the opening felt like he was cold on being the Rev Pro champion, like he doesn't care about it. And then by the end of the match, because of the emotion and the work that he puts into it, it feels important, like he cares about the title. And it kind of crosses the bridge to here, where he's really into attacking Ospreay because he knows that Ospreay's coming after his Rev Pro belt and making a big deal about wanting to prove that. So the belt's important to him, that championship's important to him, so he wants to take it to Ospreay for kind of disrespecting him in that regard. But Ospreay, you know, is able to fight him off. He hits the Os Cutter on him. He gets the best of Shibata, so you assume that, you know, Shibata's going to put Ospreay down, especially because they're already teasing the Zack Sabre Jr. match or rematch or rubber match or whatever it is in Rev Pro. So it kind of sucks to see Ospreay as a token challenger who's not going to win the belt. But they also did that interim cruiserweight title thing, so you never know. I mean, it's all very interesting. And really, the whole point of this match is just Ospreay-Shibata, and I think they did a really good job of showing that off. And I always love Jado and Gato doing their Memphis stick, so I gave this 2¾ star, and I had a good time with this match.
Yeah, I did too. I gave it 2¼. But it was pretty much a backdrop for Ospreay and Shibata. But you know what? The old guys can know, they just know what to do. And I mean, Gato and Jado and Liger and Tiger Mask, these guys have worked each other a gazillion times, so they know how to be the baked potato and the corn on the cob to the steak, which is Ospreay and Shibata. And I thought they did a fine job with that. The next match was Naito, Bushi, Evil, Sakata, who was that? Taichi. No, what's his name? God, I can't read my writing. Takacha. What's his name?
Is it Takahashi? Or did you? Hold on. I think you're skipping a match. There's Iizuka versus Yoshihashi.
You're right. My bad. Oh, yeah. The next match was Iizuka versus Yoshihashi. And I actually liked this because I thought it was a real change of pace. I saw, like, on the Observer feedback, everyone thought this was the worst match on the show. I thought it actually stood out because it was like a decent brawl. Like Yoshihashi had plenty of fire. It wasn't like epic or anything, but I thought it was a good 2.5, 2 and 3. I think it's a 2¾ star match. I got into it. Now, if I see enough Azuka, I'm sure I'm going to get really fed up with him really fast, because that's what he did with me with his run a couple years back here in New Japan. But I enjoyed it for what it was, and I thought it was a good change of pace type style match. Well, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with you a lot. I'm not on that kind of observer tick where I'm automatically I just hate it because Azuka's back to his thing. You're right, it's a breath of fresh air on this card. Azuka's whole thing, I mean, the 80s monster gimmick that he plays is really dated, and it kind of doesn't work and doesn't get a great reaction. But what made this match work was Yoshihashi. And I mean, if you went back and told me in 2013 that, you know, in a couple years Yoshihashi will look like a legitimate star, be treated like a legitimate star, and his charisma will be what's helping carry a kind of 80s monster character to an effective match, I would tell you you're like insane. But he really does here. His fire from underneath is great. His selling, the crowd's super into him, but him being evasive and getting around the Iron Fingers, I thought was great. Hits the Made in Japan, just such a fantastic finishing move. So I gave this 2.5 stars. I mean, I'm right there with you. I really enjoyed it, and as you said, it felt like something different. But I think the problem is Azuka doesn't get a lot of opponents that are of the caliber of Yoshihashi right now. So what ends up happening is that his stick really does stand out for being dated and tired when it is just the same thing over and over again in opening card, undercard matches that you know don't matter. So that's kind of what happens. But here, it's perfect. This is the perfect spot for it against the perfect opponent.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then the next match is the one I was talking about. We have Naito, Bushi, Evil, Sanada, and Takahashi versus Tanahashi, Elgin, Dragon Lee, Nakajima, and who else is in there?
Let me see. Dragon Lee, Takahashi, Nakajima, Michael Elgin, and Taguchi.
Taguchi, that's it. I'm sorry. I'm just not feeling good to go, these folks. Can't even read my writing right now. what'd you make of this?
Enjoyed it. I think that it was very good to have Takahashi and Lee starting it out with just super fast-paced stuff and just going at each other. Elgin and Naito's chemistry together is fantastic. They did a really good job. This is how you do these matches effectively, these kind of cluster, what could be clusterfuck New Japan 10-man tags that they like to do, which is you get just little snippets and little tastes of what works between the guys who have great chemistry with each other, who've been having good matches with each other. So that's exactly what you get here. Takahashi and Dragon Lee, Elgin and Naito, Tanahashi and Naito, then Taguchi coming in for the comedy spots here and there, which everyone kind of plays around with. I love Elgin doing the hip swivel to throw his big hip flying hip attack on the ground. I thought that was great. But yeah, just, you know, everyone kind of knows what this is, but towards the end, it really breaks down into a wild spot fest. And it just loses all focus. And then it feels like there's no focus and there's no sense of like escalation. And then Elgin snaps it back to reality where he power bombs Naito over the top rope to the floor. And then it does, like, that is that escalation point where it feels, oh my God, it is a big fucking deal again. Tanahashi goes flying to the floor with the high fly flow. There's the crazy orange crush powerbomb thing that Lee does, and he gets the pin. And again, it broke down into wildness, and as I said, it started to feel like it was just high spot with no escalation. But Elgin really did bring the gravity of the whole thing back with such a big move that's just wacky and crazy. And with this number of people, I mean, they gave it a good amount of time. You get little tastes of stuff that's intriguing and nice, but you know, they don't really give you any full meals here. But still, I think this was downright like the best way to do a 10-man tag like this, and I give it 3 stars.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a little bit more than you. I give it 3.5. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was just a super fun match. I thought Elgin's power spots got over really big. Then you build to this really beautiful Dragon Lee dive that was just beautiful. And then, you know, like everyone pairs off, it has their little mini matches. And then, you know, then they pair off. And I mean, it's just a fun match. I thought it was one of the better matches on the whole entire show, actually. Yeah, next up was Roppongi Vice versus Taichi and Michinoku. And, you know, one of the talking points is that Taichi and Taka are going to bring, like, work rate down, because this is, like, you know, this is, like, your high spot heavy match usually on the show. And I can see that talking point, because Taichi's one of the worst guys on the roster, and, I mean, he's just terrible. But overall, I didn't think this was a bad match or a shitty match, but it definitely didn't help the reputation of what they're going to bring to the table. I did like the stripper domination spot, not domination, stripper distraction spot to set up the heat early. The mallet is just a totally shitty foreign object. I thought there was a really great near fall with the chair shot. And I really like Taka Michinoku here when he was working that choke on the ground. I thought that was really well done and looked vicious, and I was buying as a finisher. And I thought we had a really fun finishing stretch. I give it 2.5 stars, but it definitely didn't. This is the type of match I think they needed to knock it out of the park to get that reputation off Taichi and Taka, and they didn't do it. So I'd have to call it a failure of a match. What do you think?
I agree with you, and I think Taichi's terrible, but I think that this match really, I mean, he didn't shine, but there was no real way for him to ruin it. And I give a lot of credit to Rocky Romero, and I mean, you know, people might say, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I've noticed a big change in the way that the junior tag team titles have, or tag matches have been since Roppongi Vice won the titles and are continuing to go on. They seem to have a real focus on making a totally different style of match. As you said, it's really bare bones and simple and kind of goes back to an older style with heat. As you said, the stuff with the girl on the outside distracting the refs. They're actually going out of their way to make sure the ref is distracted for gimmick shots. Yes, the mallet is crazy, but they're not blatantly doing it in front of the ref, which I think is nice. And I think that, you know, the way that the matches are being built is super smart because Rocky Romero has a lot of connection with the fans, especially being able to speak Japanese now from having gone on so many tours. So the crowd gets really behind his big hot tags after long heat segments on Trent. So I just think that, you know, he's putting together basic psychology tag team matches that feel like a breath of fresh air because they aren't reliant on a lot of big spots. Taka seems to go for a spin kick, a springboard spin kick to Trent when he's in powerbomb position, but it looks like he completely creams Taichi in the back of the head. And that is when he locks in that grounded choke that you're talking about that looked really believable. And it felt like that was an on-the-fly. He did that to give Taichi a chance to recover on the floor because it really did seem that way. So I think he locked that in probably tighter, and that's why it looks so good because he's probably legitimately trying to make sure Trent knows to not get away and try to go do anything else. He's like, hold on, you know, grab a hold and just kind of waiting in the ring to kind of situate what's going on, which is kind of perfect veteran move there when you got a rookie and you don't know how to communicate because you guys don't speak the same language. So I really enjoyed that from kind of all things are going crazy situation. I like Trent fighting everybody off with the chair, but the ref catches him and takes it away from him, which I thought was good. I really did enjoy the match. I think that there was a lot of drama, basic selling. They end up hitting their move. Boom, they get the pin. So Roppongi Vice looks solid. I mean, I give this 3.25 stars. I thought that the psychology was super strong and the match had great heat. So I was into it.
Oh, that's cool. Next up, we got Goto versus Juice Robinson. What were your thoughts here?
The juice was loose here as he starts out just mugging Goto. I mean, and he's looking good. But again, he kind of does the cannonball into the guardrail, and I've seen him doing this too many times now to set up the kind of the heat on him or him losing the control of the match, and I don't like when you kind of keep doing the same thing, which especially times when it's a your mistake spot to set up heat, it's just I'm not into that.
Kevin Kelly calls him out on it too, saying, "Oh, you didn't learn anything from the Cody Rhodes match," you know.
Right, and I think that there was actually a good amount of kind of in here where they have to blatantly kind of call out his psychology because there is none, because he's not showing a great strategy, and I think that was kind of dumb on his part. I mean, you could say the commentary shouldn't do that, but when you're this blatant, I mean, the knee's fucked up and he's going for moonsaults, getting cut off constantly, it's just, at that point, it's too much, dude. Like, you have to not make it so blatant that your strategy is not working and that you keep going to stuff that's just not going to work and it's really a bad move on your part. So I did kind of not enjoy that. Like the fighting spirit exchange that Goto goes out of his way to end by headbunting a punch that's coming at him from Juice Robinson. And again, as we go back to like the Ishihiro match where you kind of defended the Hiro selling for the punching Ishii in the head thing. I liked it a lot more in this setting, where instead of feeling like it's a comedy, he's selling because his head's hard, Goto was kind of hulking up and he was going out of his way to headbutt the punch. So I kind of enjoyed that more. Roppong GTR looks really good, and I don't understand why they would kind of use that as just a setup move instead of the finish. I think he should have just gotten the finish off of that. But I like that from there, you kind of show the dichotomy as Goto stays focused, and he doesn't do what Juice did here, which is have poor psychology. And after he doesn't get the pin on the Roppong GTR, he goes right into a kick and then another GTR and he gets the win. I thought it's an odd psychology, but still a really fun match. And I gave it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I went with you. I went 3.5 also. I like Juice throwing everything out right off at the bat. The big move of the big senton into the guardrail didn't bother me as much as you. And I like that Goto did follow up and work the back at that point. So I'm like, at least he's making sense. And he did better than what Cody did when it came to that spot. And I like that story of working the back. But then Juice, I don't know what the hell he was thinking, uses a back senton. It's like, dude, you just had your back worked over. Stupid piece of a psychology there. And I thought it just killed the comeback when he used that right off the bat. It was just, but I mean, I still enjoyed enough of the match to give it 3.5 stars. But it was like you hated the fact that he used that thing, the guardrail bump to set up the heat. I hated the fact that then he made his comeback with a back senton after having his back worked over. So, I mean, Juice has shown a lot of improvement, but he still needs to get his head in the game when it comes to a basic wrestling psychology. Then we got KES versus Hanma and Makabe versus Ishii and Yano. I'm a guy, I have a problem. I can't ever really get into triangle tag matches because it just doesn't seem like there's a structure, and it's just kind of like, here you go, we don't know really what the hell we're doing, we're just gonna book a bunch of guys on the card. So it just didn't work for me. And then hearing my boy Archer's injured doesn't help. I gave it 2.5 stars. I just wasn't able to really get into the story at all. What about you?
I think I liked it slightly more than you, but I totally agree with where you're coming from. But there was stuff in here that kind of did it for me. Like Ishii and Davey Boy Smith Jr. kind of getting to interact, because it reminded me they had a really great match in the G1 in 2014 that I just like, oh yeah, I remember how good that match was. So like that kind of made me think of that. But there was some stupid shit. I mean, they work all this heat on Ishii. And, you know, KS are just destroying him. And then when Hanma gets a chance to blind tag, he blind tags Ishii. Which is just, I get kind of the structure that you want to just keep KES looking dominant as they then work heat on Hanma. But it's like, in that situation, both guys were right there. Why wouldn't he have blind tagged on Davey Boy Smith so that he could come in and work over Ishii in that setting? Because Ishii was already beat up, you know? Stuff like that, as you said, there's just, in matches like this, the psychology in some ways goes out the window. I think KES looks super strong. They did a great job on that, making sure that, you know, they came across like killers coming back in. But I think that, you know, you may have done something to, like, have them get the win here. Or at least, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe I would have put the tag belts on them, but I guess that's not the story that they're telling yet.
I think part of it is because Archer got hurt, is hurt, and I mean, that might have been why they didn't put the belts on them.
Well, I mean, did he get hurt in this match, or was he already hurt going in?
He was already hurt going in.
Okay, oh man, he looked good for being hurt, because, I mean...
Yeah, now he's it's like he's got to have, did you hear all the things that's wrong with him?
No.
He's got to get a, what's it called, a back, I forget, but it's pretty, where it's probably going to be out for like 4 months type of thing.
Oh, geez, I might have heard someone saying he might not come back, which I hope isn't true, because he's a really great worker, and from everyone who I know who's met him, a great guy. So, but 4 months or whatever is wrong, I hope he's all right. But, okay, I mean, because he did that kind of rope-walking high cross body in this match, too, which I thought was kind of crazy.
Yeah, he worked his ass off, don't get me wrong, but there was some stuff he, like, on his bomb, he normally would land on his legs or land on his butt. But he protected himself more than normal on a couple of spots and stuff.
Okay.
And if you know about the injury, then you can kind of see it. It really isn't noticeable, but just the way he normally worked it.
Yeah, and I liked the low blow lariat into the roll up move, kind of mixing the kind of trademarks of Ishii and Toriano as the finish. So, you know, I got into it a little bit. I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. And then the main event, which, I mean, I've seen a lot of people love it. I've seen a lot of people hate it. I've seen a lot of people on the middle on it. Where does Timothy lie on this thing?
Oh, Jesus. I don't even know where I lie on it because I didn't put a star rating on this match when I watched it, I guess. I was too caught up in the moment. No, I liked the opening kind of. Okada is fired up and he's throwing forearms in the corner and I like Suzuki comes back and like Okada will throw forearm after forearm after forearm and then Suzuki responds with like one or two big shots that are just lightning fast and it puts him to the ground, which I thought was good. And the commentary did a fantastic job of putting that over. The whole time, I mean, Suzuki's aura was just off the charts. He comes across like a legitimate badass because he is a legitimate badass. He's just scary the whole way through. So yeah, I enjoyed, I really thought that it was done really well for that, especially Okada underneath selling his ass off. And yeah, it's just like, I mean, Okada finally kind of looks like he might get going and Suzuki pulls the ref into the way, and then just everyone from Suzuki-gun is out, and they're all over him, which I just think is fucking great. It's like he's already been through enough, plus you add in that. And then finally, I think it was very interesting as Okada looks to go for a tombstone, and then he tries to switch it into the Gotch tombstone, and it's just like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, that was kind of one of those cocky moves where you're just like, what are you thinking here? Why are you trying to add insult to injury? As Suzuki is then able to slip out and he locks in the knee bar. And then it does go for quite a long time from there with kind of a torture porn-esque knee bar that I think probably lasts just way too, honestly, probably lasted way too long. And the amount of time that he spends on Okada's knee is just kind of insane. As he continues to work him over for quite a while at that point. But I do enjoy it, and I think that Okada did a good job of selling, and they're kind of rolling around. And as I said, they worked their asses off. It wasn't just, you know, laying in a hold. There was a lot of work done in the hold, and Okada's looking for escapes, and Suzuki is really selling it and putting it over the whole way through. But, I mean, realistically, it did go a little bit too long. All in all, I enjoyed the match quite a lot. As I said, the aura and the presence is through the roof. Okada's made to look like a big-time superstar who's kind of unbeatable as he's able to come back and get the win, even if you know, he did get destroyed the whole way through. I think his knee selling was great the whole way through as well, and I gave it 4 stars.
Okay, I was going to say, I wonder if you were going to be a chicken shit and not give us a star rating.
Oh, no, no.
All right, man. I'm with you. I thought Suzuki was incredible in here. I thought he had that aura. I liked Suzuki after the leg. I thought Okada's offense, though, was really paint by the numbers spots, Okada spots, and he didn't really change it up. Like, for example, the big DDT from the guardrail. I mean, we've seen Okada do that a gazillion times. Okada working the neck. We know he's doing it. He's setting up the Rainmaker. I mean, that's fine. It's basic psychology. Suzuki's still back to the leg. I loved Suzuki laughing at Okada's strikes. I love that. Suzuki just punishing Okada. I thought Suzuki was legitimately great in this match. But Okada looked kind of limited and kind of weak. His strikes looked really weak and the work didn't look nearly as like nasty as Suzuki. I dug the story here. I just thought at times it got a little too methodical. And I'm a guy who likes limb work. But I thought this match could have easily gone 20 minutes and been a hell of a lot more effective than the 45-minute-plus match minutes we got or 40-plus minutes we got, whatever it was. The knee bar went way too long. I mean, way too long. And then, I mean, at one point, I mean, Okada's had his – we had the angle of the knee being destroyed – going into the match, then he got destroyed during the match, and what did he do? He hits a big drop kick as his comeback. I mean, it's like, come on, really? We don't need that. So, I mean, people are saying that Okada had this incredible sell job. I think that's insane. I thought facially he did a good job, but at times when he needed to, he shit-canned the legwork. And if you have somebody like Suzuki, who probably did 30 minutes of legwork on it, that's, like, to me, obscene. But I gave it 3 3/4. It kind of had, like, it just felt like the spots were just really repetitive at times and kind of had, like, a Ric Flair versus Sting Clash of the Champions feel to it, where if they cut time, I think they would have had a better match. And I think that was the problem here. What was your favorite match here though tonight, Timothy?
I mean, probably the main event. I would say was the best match. But I mean, if you're gonna go like favorite rather than being best, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'd probably just go with the main event being my favorite match on the show.
Yeah, that's what I went with. What about thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, thumbs down?
It's tough. I mean, it's just, the problem is it's just too goddamn long, and there's so much filler, honestly. So it's hard for me to give it a full thumbs up. I'd say thumbs in the middle, some good stuff, but there's just too much. And a lot of these New Japan shows, they're just kind of bloated, and it feels like they're bloated just to be bloated a lot of times, just to feel like they're giving you a full show. But I mean, this show with everything was like close to 4 hours, I think. And I think, you know, that's with intermission and all this, but I think you could have cut it down to being like a 3 hour show with just the important stuff and cut time off of the unimportant matches, but.
Or even the 40 minutes. Do you think they needed 40 minutes for that, to tell that story, what they did in the main event?
No, probably not. And I agree with you in some ways, but I think like Okada kind of did the, you know, I do the dropkick, but I sell the knee that, like, it hurt me to do the dropkick. And I don't know where you come down on that. I mean, I guess sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think, yeah, I think I even said it. I think that the knee bar got to levels of torture porn. And I don't think it was necessary to tell that match and that story in the wrestling match that you needed to have that much time.
Agreed. I gave it a thumbs in the middle also, and my favorite match was the main event also, even with all the flaws in it. But yeah, it was kind of a disappointing show. Really, nothing really out just grabbed me. Like I can guarantee you, there's nothing here I'm gonna rewatch ever again. And to me, that's a show that it was just there, kind of. Nothing bad, but just kind of in the middle. Nothing to be ashamed of, though. At that note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and man, we're going to look at some CWF Worldwide, and this is the tag team Apocalypto. What were your thoughts on this? There is, I mean, a lot of, it definitely was not a normal CWF Worldwide show. They stepped out of the box, took a gamble. Did you feel the gamble paid off, or?
I mean, in some ways, it worked for what it's supposed to be. It did kind of meld the two realities of kind of the broken universe of Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy with the CWF, which I think it's important to dip your toes in the water somewhat and not just go full bore. Because I think if, you know, we come back in a week or two and it's a, you know, kind of a final deletion-esque episode of CWF and you didn't kind of tease that stuff, I think it might be a shock to some people. So I think they did a good job there. The match itself, I think, was, you know, booked pretty well for all the moving parts. But at the same time, I don't know if it necessarily needed to be this big. And so it does kind of make me go, like, I understand it was kind of cool having the Dawsons and, you know, Mecha Mercenary and Biggs brawling around the building, but then having so many teams going in and out and kind of almost so
confusing.
Much and so much nothing, honestly. I mean, not just confusing, but like the Airtime Rockers, like what was the point of them being in there? I think they were in there for a second or two. You know what I mean? And there was like, they weren't even the only ones. There were some other teams as well that came in and out so quick that it was like, what was the point? So, I wouldn't say they knocked it out of the park, but, you know, it's a solid in-park double.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite part of the show was the finish. I love the Wilkins Royal team. I think that has some legs to it and could be a pretty impressive faction. So with that, with this and this, if they, as long as they, this is canon, I like that. And I like CL Party as the alt, as the doppelganger. I enjoyed her work. I thought it was interesting, and I thought she looked totally different than she normally does. So I thought they accomplished that really well. But yeah, and I mean, I enjoyed the brawling, but yeah, there was just, it felt a little long. And felt a little aimless, but you know what? God bless them for trying something different, and I think they needed to, because this is, you know, they're building to the Hardys appearing, so you kind of have to go that way. But it was just I mean, usually was really excited watching it. Here I was just it's just there.
Yeah, I agree with you. There was the team of Wilkins and Royal definitely does intrigue me, but we only got a little taste of that here.
Yeah.
I thought it was, as to me, it's kind of dumb having Dirty Daddy take out Kane Justice so easily here after he beat him at the big show. And I really think that Kane Justice should be protected somewhat. You know, I mean, I don't expect him to completely protect him, but I think he's probably their hottest kind of young star right now. So he's a guy who I wouldn't just have him going. Essentially, you feel the need to put Dirty Daddy, have some, you know, some, at least some kind of saving face on him here. I think that was kind of pointless, honestly. But again, I enjoyed it. I gave the whole thing 3 stars overall. Really liked it. I thought that the Mike Sharp and White.
Yeah, I like that a lot too.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that stuff. But again, as I said, the stuff that kind of dipped its toes into Hardy Broken Universe stuff with Mecha Mercenary pulls out a mace, and it's kind of, you could tell it's shot with a different kind of weird camera, and it's
angle,
it's more narrative. So yeah, I mean, again, not a bad thing. Cutie and the Beast looked good also, and I'm happy to see them back because they haven't been around for a few episodes. So yeah, like you said, all in all, probably not like the best episode of CWF Mid-Atlantic, but in a lot of ways it was not a regular episode of CWF Mid-Atlantic, so it kind of stands out as maybe like a one-off or a special.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move over to, I gave it 2.5 stars. Let's move over to Ring of Honor TV, and it opens up with Whitmer and Punisher Martinez versus Rowan Hansen. I thought this was solid, you know, War Machine controls early, big miss by Hansen, sets up the heat, but, you know, it ends up being a brawl that they can't contain. They throw it out. I guess they're pushing this as a feud going forward, and so this was like kind of stage one or two in what they're doing. So they're going to be leading to some form of stip match. So what they did, though, I thought was a fine in a part one or part two of a build to a bigger match. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, the only problem is just like last time these two teams faced off, I said it then and now I'm saying it again, that this is the trope that they do too often with War Machine, with the DQ ring brawl bullshit, and I think it goes too far when you're doing it every time, every feud, over and over again with the same team. So for me, it does kind of start to grate on me, especially when, I mean, you know, I don't know anything for certain, but I do know that there's some grumblings about the contract situation for both members of War Machine, honestly, specifically Ray Rowe. So, I mean, this was the taping probably where you should have just had, you know, Martinez get a clean win. I understand they're kicking the can down the road and trying to build to something bigger, but I would have had them look even more dominant. They tried to. They flirted with the idea that Punisher Martinez was able to fight off both members of War Machine by himself, which is good to start kind of building him up as being a badass. But I think that they could have taken it even a step further here. But I gave it 2 stars. It was fine. But again, as I said, this kind of angle that they do with War Machine every time is really starting to wear thin for me.
Yeah, part of it, I think, is because the company is so screwed up right now, not knowing who's coming and who's going, who's staying. I mean, this whole thing. I mean, you have Ray Rose on the list. Dijak just left, you know, and he's on this show. There's just you don't know who in the hell to push, who to job, who to, you know. There's so much going on right now in that company, and I don't know. I don't even know if they know what's up and what's down right now. That's how screwed up they are, and they don't know how to push. They don't seem like they have a strong leader, and it's just kind of whacked in a way. Next up, we got the Kingdom versus Hollis and Skylar. Was there another person?
Yeah, it's Joseph. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I think he's also Joseph Black in other places. He's not a big deal, really.
What'd you make of this?
I mean, it seems like a jobber match, essentially. And I was almost thinking maybe they were going to do complete jobber matches. They jump Joseph from the start and hit their finisher on the floor. I think it's called the Revolution, which, I mean, what's the name of that other, the Rebellion? This is another, like, ROH trope. Even with different creative, they have these issues. Like, you got this team called the Kingdom, and their finisher is called the Revolution, but then you've also got a group that's called the Rebellion, and then it's just too easy to confuse. From there, it's the Bruiserweights are down a man. John or Skylar and Hollis are trying to fight off the Kingdom with just the two of them. I mean, there's a lot of just who fucking cares about the rules, three guys in the ring going crazy on each other with nothing to it. Colt Cabana is on commentary, which doesn't help anything. I mean, there's no point in having him. But I would like to point out that Colt Cabana is wearing a long sleeve baseball tee with a little pocket on the front that I bought a fuck ton of different colors from Target because they were all on sale for $3. So Colt Cabana is wearing a $3 t-shirt on television. I'm just going to put that out there so everybody understands what Colt Cabana, what kind of man he is. From there, Dalton Castle and the boys come out after the match. I gave the match 2.5 stars. I like the New Kingdom a lot, and they did a good job here. I like Skylar and Hollis a lot as well, so I think that they did a good job. I don't understand why they just wanted to take the Joseph out of the match completely, but they kind of did. But either way, the spots and everything was well timed. The Kingdom are really good as a unit. All in all, fun match.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's nothing to really add on there. And then we got the cool Kingdom promo where Dalton and the boys challenge, and Cabana ends up taking out the boys. Yeah, and then Cabana gets kicked off commentary. I thought it was okay. What about you?
Yeah, it was great. I like it. I like the boys beating up Dalton Castle, and then he blocks them. He says they're going to do that to you. I thought that was great. It just, Dalton Castle gets his character so well and just makes everything work really perfectly.
And then we get this really kick-ass Cody Rhodes vignette I thought was fantastic and looked much different than anything Ring of Honor has ever shot. I mean, this looked really professional and looked like something you should hang your hat on. I thought this was excellent. What about you?
Yep, thought it was great. Cody probably had something to do with producing it, and that's why it came out good, because he's all obsessed with that kind of nerdy kind of comic book television character show thing. So he totally made it work. And one thing that popped into my head as it was going on is I sure hope that Johnny Sorrow is watching ROH still, because this vignette promo is right up his alley.
Yep, it really is. But I guarantee he's not. Then we have the Young Bucks versus the Tempura Boys. And you know what? I first of all, let's go to a promo by the Tempura Boys as the Young Bucks. And I thought that was freaking hilarious, them doing a Tempura Boy impersonation. I thought that was fantastic. And I thought it was a real fun match. You know, these guys have worked each other a lot in New Japan. And the Tempura Boys looked pretty good here. What about you?
Yeah, I think they did a good job. Everything was very solid. The opening kind of promo thing that you said was slightly racist, as they're kind
it
of
was,
like
it was, yeah.
mockingly doing it. But it fits the Young Bucks character, so I can't be mad at it. You know what I mean? They're shitheads, and that's their thing. They're fucking shitheads. So
it didn't come across as hateful. It came across as juvenile, you know?
Exactly, and that's kind of why it works for them. I did hate that we take a commercial break, and then we come back to highlights from what we missed while we were on break from a taped show. I'm like,
they looked hot, too.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, if this cool stuff happened, and we all know this is fucking taped, just show me the cool stuff. Don't, like, here's some highlights. Fuck that. You know, and that just kind of drives me crazy. Tempura Boys hit Stereo Germans on the floor that I really like. They come back in, and they work over Matt, and they get cut off with a super kick from Nick while he has a Boston Crab on Matt, and it's kind of like, yeah, totally. Like, him just coming in and super kicking him while he's in the Boston Crab, that's a great kind of heel thing. But then at the same time, it's like, the Tempura Boys were doing a bunch of double teams. They didn't have any disregard for that, like, throughout a big chunk of the match. So, I don't see any heat, because it's just kind of turnabout's fair play. So, it just goes back into, like, the Young Bucks. They have some of the natural instinct of what it takes to be good heels, but it just feels like they don't know how to put together the full match to keep them heels. And I don't think they care about being heels, honestly, because they care more about selling shirts. So that's fine. Oh, yeah. It gets over and people like it. All in all, I think good match. I mean, the Bucks, they just win at the end. That's it. 2¾ star. Good stuff. Lots of hot action. And Tempura Boys looked great.
What about the main event, man? I thought this was a really strong match with Leo Rush and who was that? Gresham and Dijak and Sabin and Shelley and Jay White, and then you get Marty Scurll on commentary, who was absolutely fabulous and made this whole entire presentation so much more fun, and I can't put over this whole segment enough. I loved it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they did a really good job of putting the show together, and even the details of the commentary thing I thought was smartly done. In that they had Colt Cabana for the opening match, and I think actually the opening two matches, he gets kicked off of commentary, so then it's just Kevin Kelly by himself for the Young Bucks match, in a match where you don't really need a second commentator because there's so much action, you could just kind of do it. And then you come into this match, and then you have Scurll back out. So they did a good job of keeping the booth kind of cycled fresh and being smart about where they placed in a color commentary guy.
And I want to say, we've been talking about how they shouldn't overexpose Scurll working wrestling so much. This is where he's at his best, doing vignettes and color commentary, where he comes across as special, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like, he's so good at his character on commentary. You remember the Thunder Bastard? I think we definitely reviewed it, where he was on commentary for most of the match when he was supposed to be in it. He was fantastic there. He's fantastic here. And also by being super annoying. I mean, the fake vomiting just pissed me off. Yep. I'm super annoyed, and I'm like, fuck this guy. And then he's hitting good quips and just really being a dick and getting on your nerves throughout it. So that was just great stuff. Leo Rush and Donovan Dijak have amazing chemistry together. It's so insane how they fit so well together, and they show it off in this match. I am really excited to see what these guys can do when they're both in Evolve, because they're just not getting the time to shine here in ROH. White always looks fantastic with fast-paced action. Grisham starts off a dive train, and then Dijak puts it over the top with a huge dive to the floor. The stuff at the end with Rebellion coming in to save Rush was really kind of weird, but it sets up a nice closing stretch just between Rush and Dijak. And again, I think it was really smart of them to focus this match a lot around that dynamic between Rush and Dijak, because they are really, you wouldn't expect it based on their size. Because, I mean, Rush is small even for the small guy wrestlers, and Dijak is big even for indie wrestling. He's like actually big. And so they just have this charisma together in ring that's like off the charts. I don't know what it is. So focusing on that mostly for the match was great. It comes down to the finish. Dijak gets the win, and I guess it's so that you can set up Scroll getting the big win on Dijak at the pay-per-view, but I mean, who knows if that's even going to happen? So it's just, it's kind of a weird move, but the action, everything in here, I think Saban and Shelley kind of, they got lost in the shuffle when it came to taking notes and remembering it, but they were an important part of the match, and I think probably were really the generals of helping keep the match together. Gresham always looks fantastic, hitting, you know, a few technical spots here and there, but really it was focused around Dijak and Rush, which is perfect. I gave it 3 stars. I really enjoyed it, and it made the kind of TV title division look like a big fucking deal.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5. I really liked it a lot and stuff. So, but that was the Ring of Honor, which I thought was a really solid TV show this week. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. I would say very solid, good show from top to bottom. You know, some quirky, weird stuff because of it's ROH. No matter what, I mean, I was just talking about it with some other people, and they told me, oh, they just announced Jay White versus Jay Briscoe in ROH, and I'm like, cool. Has that match ever happened before? And that's the thing about ROH. It's like, no matter what match they announce, no matter what's going on in ROH, unfortunately, I couldn't tell you if it's happened 1,000 times or if it's never happened before.
Yeah.
Nothing is super exciting. Nothing really has a lot of buzz. So even when they have a super solid product like this and a good TV show, I just don't have that buzz where I'm like, yay, I'm super excited to watch the next show. It's just kind of kicking the can down the road is all they do.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I'm with you on that. Let's move over to NXT. And it opens up with Sanity versus the Bollywood Boys. And, you know, this was what it was. The Bollywood Boys get destroyed by Sanity. It was just trying to push Sanity as a, you know, bigger act and trying to get him over. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it wasn't even Sanity. This was all Killian Dane. I mean,
yeah,
Alexander Wolfe, I don't even think, tags in. He looks good, and he's working better big man spots, but he needs to pick a new finish. I don't like him using the One Wing Angel or the Oyster Plantation as his finish. I just don't think it fits him. I give this 1.75 star.
Cool. And then we get a Liv Morgan and Billy Kay. What do you think of this?
I liked this about the same, honestly. Liv is plucky as shit. She's just a really good kind of plucky baby face who you kind of get behind from fighting from underneath. Billy Kay's offense I don't know. I'm not super into Billie Kay, honestly. I don't find anything she does super believable. I liked the finish with Peyton trying to help, and it inadvertently costs Billie Kay the match. Liv gets the pin. I mean, realistically, again, 1.75 star. I mean, this is just TV time filler, basically.
Yeah, exactly what it is. And then we got a Sanity attacks Ty Dillinger. And I love, we get Strong and No Way Jose arrive as backup, and we get a nice little angle there. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I loved it, setting up this big trios match for the finish, for the main event. I think it's great, and that's a team that I can definitely get behind. No Way Jose, Roddy Strong, and Ty Dillinger, that's, you know, I'm excited for those three as a team, so it's good stuff.
Yep, and then we get Regal announcing a Tyler Bate match, so that should be good, right?
Yeah, and I love that they're doing a good job of pushing Tyler Bate. I mean, I think, after I said it, you know, last week or week before, that I think that he should just go with this guy full bore, all power straight ahead, and it feels like they are. I mean, they're doing promo packages for him in the middle of the show. They're setting up his matches, so it seems like they definitely see that there's something important with this guy.
Yep, and they set up Regal setting up Asuka versus the Mean Girls, right?
Yeah, that as well, as they come in and say that they want to have a match with Liv. They want another match with Liv, and Liv, he says they'll have a tag team match, and she can pick her partner. So we'll see if she picks Asuka.
Cool. And then we get a Revival versus Heavy Machinery. What were your thoughts here, man?
I love that Nigel almost kind of makes it very clear that this is a tune-up match for the Revival, as they're trying to pick the next biggest team on the roster, not like biggest by popularity, but biggest just by plain up straight up size. So I think that's interesting. It's kind of the Revival is looking to get ready for what they're going up against. So I think the psychology of that is perfect. I love Heavy Machinery using this move where Tucker has Dash in a bear hug and he just throws him to Dozovich, who keeps the bear hug. I think that was great. Revival get the tag, and they're able to take control over Dozer, and I like him using what power, you know, the power that he has to be able to kind of throw them off and get the tag. I think Tucker's hot tag looks great, as he's just such a big, big guy, and flying around the ring like that is always fantastic. But then he goes for the tag, and it's only been a few seconds. It's kind of that wrestling trope where the guy gets worked over forever, you get that hot tag, and then as soon as you're done with the hot tag, you tag the other guy back in, and it's always like, what? Like, give him more time to rest, brother.
But yeah, why?
It bites him in the ass as he goes back, and Dozer gets pulled off the apron. The distraction works wonders as Tucker is too busy trying to follow Dash around, and Dawson, bam! Out of nowhere, DDT pin. And I loved the finish. I thought that was so great. But 2.5 stars. I mean, this is a quick little tune-up. It was a slightly, like, jobber to the stars-esque match. They're not jobbers, but they're just a step above. But I liked it. Good psychology, good stuff. And I'm excited for Heavy Machinery. I can't wait for it to be their time to get a little bit more shine. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then we get the Authors of Pain are out, and we get a Revival promo. It looks like they're heading in that direction. I've been hearing it's going to be those two in DIY in a three-way program. What would you make of all that?
I could get down with it, but I mean, you're not a big fan of trios three-way tags. So I don't know. I mean, I guess the problem is they probably don't want to necessarily turn Revival face, but they kind of have to at this point if they're going to feud with Authors of Pain. So. I liked the finish. I liked Revival talking shit, and then as soon as Authors of Pain come out, they're hightailing it to the back, saying that they're not going to fight for free. So I thought that was good. And then when Authors of Pain pose with their belts on the ramp, Revival jumping from behind. So, you know, they're still kind of staying shitty heel, but they're the heels you kind of like against these foreign monsters who are running roughshod over the whole company.
Yeah, and then we get Rude's promo, which is his coronation of being the NXT champion. I thought this was just a great piece of business. What about you?
Yeah, but it was so weird because it was so not Bobby Roode. I mean, the Bobby Roode from TNA was not this guy. I mean, he was boisterous. He's strutting around the ring. He's kind of playing Ric Flair in some ways, and he's also doing his own thing. So it was really interesting seeing that he's doing totally different.
Yep, and then we get a fun six-man with... Ty and Strong and No Way Jose versus Sanity. What you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, lots of great action. Love Strong, kind of, again, I mean, it reminds me of, there was that crazy Atomico match, I think it might have even been 2015, that was All Stars versus Bullet Club. It was like the Briscoes, Roddy.
Oh, I love that match, yeah.
Yeah, and Roddy kind of showed some of that here as he got in there and was doing his hot, crazy hot tag, just taken out, running roughshod over everybody. So I thought that was good. And then having Nikki come in and she dives on Ty and takes him out to the floor and all that kind of chaos and everything that's going on because of Sanity, having an extra person and just everything going all over the place. Killian's able to get that big crossbody and he gets the win. And I gave it 2.75 stars. Again, I enjoyed it, but, you know, it wasn't anything amazing with a lot of great psychology, but it was a lot of fun, a lot of high spots, and it kind of continues on promos going forward. Or not promos, but storylines going forward.
And I thought it was a great way to showcase Strong and show how great he is and stuff. So.
Yeah.
With that note, I thought the show overall was fine piece of business, you know. I was there pushing stories forward and seeing where things are fleshing out. What about you?
Yeah, no, totally agree. Good stuff, and you know, we're right after the big show, so we're just kind of resetting the deck or seeing what storylines are continuing the same and which storylines are getting tweaked and who's, you know, new faces and comings and going. So, you know, it's still interesting and there's some cool stuff going on here.
Exactly. I'm with you. And at that note, why don't we take a break and we'll be right back.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we're looking at the current Progress show, the one they just aired recently, and I gotta say, overall, I was not a huge fan of this show. I thought it was solid, but I was kind of disappointed overall. I think right now Progress doesn't know exactly what they're in a transitional state, and then I think part of it is like the talent being that the WWE will be using going forward, and I just think there's a lot of moving parts right now with progress. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think I may have been higher on the show than you. But at the same time, I think, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call this a really great show all around, but there was some kind of shining spotlights for sure.
All right. We open up with the London Riots versus the Kings of the North. I gave this 2 3/4 stars. They had some early shtick working, and I thought the mirror spots they were working, I thought worked really well for the crowd, but felt really phony to me. What they did work for the crowd, but it didn't work for me. So for them it worked, but I couldn't get behind it. I enjoyed the big high spots. I liked the work on Davis's back during the heat segment. There was a lot of stuff to like about this match. I gave it 2 3/4. So what about you?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I actually expected this match to be worse than it was. It definitely had its issues. The joking around stuff at the beginning, the kind of the Kings, that I think that their heat was too short, but I did like that it was really aggressive and it really showed off their mean streak. I think that the Riots can be a little sloppy, especially towards the end of matches. I think that stuff can come across a little bit kind of disjointed, even if...
I think it's because our cardio is pretty shitty, huh?
It's probably because they get blown. I mean, there are a couple of big guys who like to drink and like to party and have fun, so I'm not necessarily thinking they're spending a lot of time at the gym. Their stuff can really get listless towards the ends of matches. And then there was one really glaringly bad spot where Corbin, I think, hits a powerbomb. He hits a German with a bridge, and he's got him down for two. Bonesaw comes over the top with the jackknife pin. It's kind of a... American Wolves spot, but the ref considers it two separate pin attempts, so Davis is effectively pinned for a four count, and it's not considered the finish as a pin in the match, and I really just didn't like that. But all in all, I think it was a good showing for the Kings of the North as a new tag team coming in. I kind of understand that the Riots as the gatekeepers of progress, they're doing a lot of opening matches with new teams. But I find it very weird that they seem to be winning a lot. And I think that this is a match where maybe Kings of the North could have won, or it could have come across a little bit more like they pushed them to the limit. I mean, it really, in the end, didn't feel like Kings of the North were a big threat coming out of this. And I don't know if the Riots necessarily know how to work a match where they win, but also put the other team over strong. And again, I thought that the Kings definitely showed off a mean streak in here, and they came across aggressive and violent, but I don't necessarily think that they came across as like threats to the tag division, which is kind of a problem because tag team champions are gone. And I mean, they do have a couple of really good tag teams that have a match later on here, but after that it's like the rest of the division just feels really, really kind of like it doesn't have much to it. So I gave it 2 3/4 stars as well. I thought it was good but not great.
Yeah, and then we got Laura D'Amato versus Shakira. What were your thoughts here?
Laura's fire and her sloppiness have like a danger and kind of an unruly passionateness to it that I love a lot when she's on offense. Her selling is fine, but it's not amazing. But the crowd gets behind her just because they know her and they've seen her so much.
And in the angle, and she had a really good angle, you know, with Ginny, you know.
Yeah, and that really helped. Her kind of going with an MMA gimmick, I don't think works for me. The ground and pound didn't look bad, but it didn't look great.
Yeah, it makes no sense since she was, a secretary, right?
Right.
Her old gimmick, and now she's an MMA star. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, so I don't like that. I think Chikara, I didn't really see much to Chikara here at all, honestly. I wouldn't necessarily even worry about them ever bringing her back. Just because, I mean, maybe after a while she gets a little bit better. But, I mean, right here, right now, I don't think she's necessarily someone they need. And then the finish, Chikara gets the La Sombra and Laura kicks out of it on two and locks in a grounded octopus. And I know that... I get what they're trying to do. It was supposed to be the flash submission, but that's not the way you do it. And I don't think that that worked to be a setup flash submission to show that she's dangerous on the mat for her MMA gimmick and can get you out of anywhere. Because I don't think you should hit a big move like that, have the kick out, and then do it. It just didn't work for me. I gave it 2.5 stars.
I went 2. Yeah, it was just kind of there for me. Some of the stuff would clicked, but then other times it just didn't. Then we got Jern Simmons versus Roy Johnson, was it?
Yeah, Roy Johnson, the body guy.
Yeah, I gotta say, man, Simmons' entrance got over huge, but I wonder if the first time he did it, I wonder what type of reaction that thing would have got, because I think you gotta go wholeheartedly and buy into it and sell it big, and I think I thought it was interesting, but I could see this thing just failing miserably on the first few times he tried it. These shoulder block spots were the shits early on. But Jern has this like charisma about him, and I expect big things from him, Dan, in the future. I gave it a 2 stars. But I didn't see really a whole lot of things in Roy Johnson, really. But I think Simmons has a potential. Well, what were your thoughts?
That was interesting, because I was going to actually ask you if you've seen Jern Simmons ever before. And I'm going to guess you haven't seen him. He was the WXW champion up until just recently.
Okay.
So, definitely.
Then I might have seen him, because I watched some WXW and stuff. But he just didn't stand out to me.
Yeah, and he kind of came out of nowhere. And because of his size and his gimmick, they kind of pushed him to the top instantly. And he had a pretty good championship run. He is a guy, as you said, with a lot of charisma. He stands out. He plays this character in WXW where essentially everybody should bow down to him because he's just so big. And they call him the massive Jern Simmons. And he's a big deal because he's just a big beast of a man who can kick everybody's ass. And he does really well. He cuts promos in English, and it all kind of gets over with a nice charisma that I think is great. And yeah, the entrance is awkward in some ways, but also just fucking amazing. And I kind of love that it plays with that. I think Roy, you know, Roy is big and powerful, but he doesn't have the inexperience. And I love that that's kind of the story that they continue with the match. As soon as Roy has any kind of advantage, he looks for a power slam, and it was just, you know, it's just not the time, as Jern is nowhere near kind of out of sorts enough to get it, and boom, quick pile driver out of that. So I liked it. I thought it was a big meaty man match, and they kind of beat the shit out of each other. And I think Roy really, not a terrible seller, but he's not great yet. But to me, I think WWE has to love this guy, because honestly, he reminds me a lot of a young John Cena. Like, even probably before John Cena was even on, like, SmackDown, but, like, OVW, UPW Cena, like, very early on.
Yeah, it's the prototype, right?
Yeah, like, prototype area, like, time Cena, where he's just got something to him. He's strong. The crowd connects with him. But he hasn't quite put the pieces together, and he's a little bit awkward as an athlete, but I think he can get there. I liked it a lot more than you, as I gave this match 3 stars.
Okay, fair enough. Then we got Ringkampf, which I love that name, versus Bank and Cooper. What were your thoughts here?
Oh, God, I thought this was really good. I loved Banks and Axel Dieter trading off grappling in the beginning. There's that fantastic hammerlock that Dieter has, and Banks grabs the headlock, and Dieter headstands out of it, pulls off this crazy counter, and then he uses it like somehow that counter helped him tighten up the hammerlock as he sells it that now it's tighter. Both guys are kind of selling it. I think that's great. Travis gets some control, and TK takes the time to get a kiss before he comes in on the tag, and that costs him. And I just kind of love that there's a lot of that where TK is too busy thinking about Dahlia, and it's really costing him big, especially against a team like this. When the South Pacific Power Trip can get control, it's from their fast-paced action and having Dahlia grabbing legs and distracting, you know, the guys that they're going up against. I think that that's great. Walter and TK, I mean, just good stuff, as Walter is just so dismissive to TK as just this little pissant that can barely bother him. He brushes him off and disregards him while also dispatching him in a way that just comes across like he's a giant. I mean, he's like Galactus or something, just destroying a planet as he kind of just bats it away from his face as something annoying is kind of getting into his vision, which I just love the attitude that he brings to that. Travis Banks, I just think, is amazing. I mean, the guy is just, I just recently listened to him on Morgan Webster's podcast, and hearing his background's insane. He trained with Davey Richards in them, so he's, you know, legit jiu-jitsu guy, but he just has an intensity to his stuff, and his kicks and his attacks look great, and he's just throwing kick after kick on Walter, and then Walter hits one big boot, and boom, he's on the ground. And yeah, I love Dahlia interfering when she can. And finally, Walter just boots her in the face off the apron, and the crowd pops huge for that. And I was just like, Jesus, like, you know, this progress doesn't feel like the crowd to cheer for a woman getting hit, but I think that they did a great job of building it with her just being an annoyance the whole way through, that they were finally like, fuck it, it's okay that he hit her. And then he's so fired up, you know, TK is so mad about what Walter did. He gets up in Walter's face and Walter just kind of shot puts him. It's not even a choke slam. He just grabs him by the throat and pushes him over the top rope to the floor. And it just looks fucking insane. Finally, the South Pacific Power Trip get this win with TK holding the feet of Axel Dieter as he was trying the outside in vertical suplex, which is a great spot that's been done for years and years, obviously. But always looks great, especially the way TK has this shit-eating grin. Like, he just stole it, and he knows he stole it to get the win. And, I mean, Ring Conf looked amazing. South Pacific Power Trip, while they looked good, also looked like fucking assholes. And, like, you know, they're definitely not as good as Ring Conf, but they're more willing to cheat. And I thought it was interesting coming in, because Ring Conf are definitely solid heels in WXW. They felt like heels starting out in this match, and by the end of it, they felt like big time baby faces that the crowd is ready to get behind, which is awesome to see. This kind of cold, calculating Germans are being cheered by this British crowd. They're just so into them, and it's so great to see that kind of dichotomy. And I have to give credit to South Pacific Power Trip, because, you know, it's really hard to get a team like Ring Comp over as baby faces. They don't scream baby face, so you have to be
they're not good looking. They're German. I mean, Ring Kampf, I mean, it's a playoff Mein Kampf. I mean, yeah, everything about him screams heels. That's how effective of heels as the South Pacific Power Trip is, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah, I gave this 4 stars. This was some great business here.
Yeah, I went 3 3/4, and I really did like it. I love the grappling early on. I love that. I was really digging that mat work. The Banks Dieter pairing off was so slick, incredible, and I thought Ring Comps had a really nice shine, and I really felt Dieter really got over here, where I feel like he's a guy who, when Skrull is doing tours, he's a guy they could book on this show, and they wouldn't miss a beat by getting a high effective match, because he came across as like a guy. From what I've seen him in the past, he seems like a guy who's getting it. Here, he seemed like really the total package in the match, and it felt like a Marty Skrull, Zack Sabre type of worker, where he could come in and have really kick-ass matches. Next up was the Thunder Bastard, and I thought this had too much comedy in it. I thought there was a lot of just moving around. I felt that the match lacked spark, but they had a lot. It felt kind of Memphis-y at times, like Memphis has invaded Progress. But I love the Gibson Andrews pairing in the match. But it just on paper, it is. I thought this was the worst Thunder Bastard match we've seen that we reviewed, and it just didn't click at all for me. What about you?
Yeah, and it really sucks, because Progress has done such a good job with the Thunder Bastard, which is a match that I find, for my taste, is inherently flawed. And, you know, it's not something that I'm going to get into just because of the format of the match. And they've always done such a good job with it that you kind of get used to that concept and expect a lot more. And then when it does this, it does kind of suck a lot to see them kind of fall. No, they didn't really fall on their face, but it just wasn't perfect.
I mean, there was times when the match just came to a screeching halt because they're going to do a comedy bit, or, you know, so a lot of the narratives that were happening kind of got thrown to the side because, hey, we're going to do Mastiff is coming out, now we're going to do some comedy spots, you know? It just didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, no, and Jack Sesmith, I'm, you know, all for the guy, but I don't know that he's in a spot where I take him serious enough to do kind of what they're doing with him here. And the stuff with the pastor and Sebastian. And I think we need to talk about it, because there's a lot of debate about Sebastian. Do you think that the heat that he gets is good? Do you think he's a guy that they should even be booking at this point? Like, some people try to argue, well, he's obviously the best heel in the company because everyone legitimately fucking hates him. Some people say it's that X-Pac heat. There's no reason. Like, where do you come down on Sebastian? Do you think that they should even have him in the company at this point?
I mean, if they want to keep him underneath, I have no problem if he's going to put over upcoming baby faces. But yeah, the fact that he took over the show at the beginning on the Facebook Live chat, no, we don't need him. And I don't think he's a heel that's. He might get heat, but his work isn't good enough to be a top heel. So there you go. What about you?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I don't see it. I think he gets some heat. I was actually kind of higher on him when he first started out, but he hasn't really progressed in ring. And his character work, I think he's one of these guys who just, he got that label put on him. Oh, he's a good talker. Oh, he's super charismatic. And then once he kind of gets into it, there's no substance. There's nothing to it. There's no direction. And so, yeah, he comes across authentic, but he doesn't come across like he's selling me anything. He's not making me want to watch anything. I'm just not into the guy.
There's nobody I want to see him work with.
Yeah.
That's not a top heel.
Yeah. So, I gave this 3 stars. There's a lot of good stuff. Like you said, Gibson Mandrew's fantastic, but, it really meandered at times. It just was too long and drawn out. And there's a lot of weak guys in here, and having so many members of the Origin in all at the same time, even if Mastiff did turn on them, like, it just felt repetitive and just, yeah, it wasn't up to snuff when it comes to Thunder Bastards.
That's how I'm with you completely. I gave it 2.5 though, because I was just, at times it just felt like it was like a screeching halt. But then we got a pretty interesting main event, a Pete Dunne versus Jimmy Havoc. What were your thoughts here?
I liked it, but there was a lot of fucking gaga and bullshit. I mean, the start with Trent Seven looking to hit 7 stars on Havoc, and Havoc had his hand on the title, so he pulls it in and just hits this really light, shitty belt shot that just sends Seven to the floor, and I was just, God. And then, I mean, Seven gets involved again, and the chopping the post spot, again, I talked about it earlier, but I fucking hate signature sells, signature counters to your moves. All that kind of stuff always drives me fucking crazy. So the chopping the post thing that Seven feels the need to do in every match really gets on my goddamn nerves.
What about the do-si-do with the belt? I thought that was just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said. That was like the weakest looking belt shot I've ever seen in my life. Right. It just looks so fucking bad. So yeah, but then Dunn bites Havoc's fingers, and there's blood in his mouth and pouring out of Havoc's hands, and then that's when it's, okay, this is getting fucking savage. Dunn is all over the hand. Stomping on it, and then I love that he sets up that kind of, you put the hand on the mat and you stomp the elbow, he sets that up, and then he just punts the shit out of his elbow instead of stomping on it, which he gets this wry smile on his face, and I just fucking love it, because Pete Dunne looks like a fucking bastard here, just working over the hand, stomping at the hand, hitting these nasty strikes to the hand. He looks for the drop dead, but it gets countered into a reverse DDT. And then yeah, it's like Havoc looks like he's getting going, Dunne distracts the ref. I could go the rest of my life without hitting another person, seeing another person hitting one of these ironic pedigrees as a wink and a nod to going to WWE. I'm sick of it. Just knock it off, guys. At least they didn't do the one count here that you see in most places. But yeah, I just don't need that anymore. And then from there, Trent Seven just comes in because he's annoyed at what's going on. And it's a fucking Smaz DQ finish. But 3.5 stars. When the match was good, it was good. When it was bad, it was pretty bad, but it kind of made up for it, and I understand where they're going storyline wise.
Yeah, I went 3.5, and it felt more of like a setup for the big angle at the end of the match. I hated that do-si-do with the belt. Even how he hit the belt didn't bother me. The fact that he did a do-si-do, I thought was terrible. I enjoyed the brawling. I thought Havoc's running punch was really nasty there. And I liked Dunn torturing Havoc in his heat segment. But it all felt like a setup for the big return of Haskins and Morgan Webster, which got a huge pop and made the crowd happy on a show that really wasn't that great. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Ring Comp, South Pacific Power Trip fucking killed it. And then the big returns at the end were obviously awesome and everyone got super excited for. So... the Thunder Bastard, I think if the Thunder Bastard had been better, like just slightly better, maybe if you didn't have to put Sebastian in there, because I think someone got pulled and that's why they replaced him. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I forget who it was, but someone got hurt.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it might have been Bate, because I think Tyler Bate.
Yeah, it might have been Tyler Bate. Yeah, it might have been. Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you had Tyler Bate in there instead of Sebastian, maybe that would have made a big difference. And if that match had delivered, then I think this is looked at as a really good show or a much better show. But because it's such a big part of the show, it's so long, and it really kind of shit the bed. It didn't really shit the bed, but it just wasn't anywhere near as good as I expected. It kind of really affected the overall feel of the show. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not, I'm a little bit more positive on Progress than I was, say, at the time of that big show at the O2 or whatever. But at the same time, I mean, knowing that the guys that are heading out, I'm kind of worried about who they're going to replace them with.
Yeah, I'm with you. Totally with you. I give the show a thumbs in the middle. What about you?
I'd probably give it a thumbs up, but that's just because I'm a obviously biased shill for UK indies.
Yeah, you are. but the tag match is definitely something you should go out of your way to see and stuff. But yeah, that's the one thing. I was really excited about Progress for my WrestleMania weekend. I'm kind of getting less and less interested in them. And stuff, so well, it is what it is, but I'd rather them be on the Red WWE Network so I don't have to pay two subscription prices, so I'll be happy once that happens. Well, any final thoughts on the show?
No, I mean, it's funny to me, you know, with Jern coming in and Ring Conf and WXW in Progress, there's a big match coming up with Riddle versus David Starr for the Atlas title versus the shotgun title, and kind of they're working together. It's kind of interesting with Progress being in bed with WWE because, you know, WXW is not. They are on Flow Slam, so it's kind of weird that they're all working together. And yeah. It, as this was happening, I was thinking about just how good Travis Banks really is. It's, I wish that there was some kind of like a UK indie mixtape wrestling, because some of these shows from the smaller UK indie feds have some great matches, but then a lot of filler. So it's like, I couldn't imagine bringing one for us to review here, but there are some great matches that we're kind of missing out on not talking about. That's kind of my final thoughts when it comes to UK indies. I wish that there was a way to have more of them, but there is a new service. It's UK Indie or UK Wrestling On Demand. They tweeted at me the other day saying that they're going to have a Roku channel probably sometime next month. And they're getting some of the smaller UK companies together. It's really cheap. It's like $3.99 a month, I think, is the service.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and so you can definitely feel like you can kind of pick and choose and just check out a couple matches here and there. Hopefully they add on some more companies. Hopefully some more guys get on Flow Slam, and then it does turn into being able to look for those matches, because there are some great guys on the underneath of the UK indies who are not getting attention because, you know, you're not wanting to pay $8 per show to see, you know, two or three good matches and then four or five terrible matches.
No, I'm with you completely. What about a Powerbomb TV? Have you heard anything? Are they debuting, what, tomorrow?
Supposed to be debuting tomorrow, maybe today when you're listening to this, depending on when this podcast comes out. But yeah, it's supposed to be coming out. I have heard nothing. It's been pretty radio silence coming out of them, other than just a tweet saying that they're coming out, or they're officially launching tomorrow.
Yeah, so there we go. You got anything you want to plug, brother?
No, I do a bunch of stuff. Just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead to find out about it.
Yeah, follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Hopefully, next week we won't be back. We're taking a break off. Timothy's on vacation. And hopefully I'll feel better by then. So I can throw a little bit more energy into the show. Everyone, have a great week. I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perceptions of death.